The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on November 1st, 1988 at New Taliban Farm in Carriera, Mississippi. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th Canto, Chapter 4, Text 26.
Service to the Lord. Which is simultaneously the best. Process of austerity. Ardiva. The king. Swadharmena. By his constitutional activities. Unto the Supreme Lord. Freedom. Satisfying. Sadhan. All varieties of. Aman. Material desires.
Sadai.
Gradually.
Jahal.
Gave up. Translation. The king of this planet, Maharaj Ambarisha, thus performed devotional service to the Lord, and in this endeavor practiced severe austerity, always satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his constitutional activities. He gradually gave up all material desires. Translation with repetition. The king.
Of this planet.
Maharaj Ambarisha. Thus performed devotional service.
To the Lord.
And in this endeavor.
Practice severe austerity.
Always satisfying.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
By his constitutional activities. He gradually gave up. All material desires. Report. Severe austerities in the practice of devotional service are of many varieties. For example, in worshipping the deity in the temple, there are certainly laborious activities. Shivigraha radhana nityanana shingaratana mandira majanado. One must decorate the deity, cleanse the temple, bring water from the Ganges and Jamuna, continue the routine work, perform arati many times, prepare first-class food for the deity, prepare dresses, and so on. In this way, one must constantly be engaged in various activities. And the hard labor involved is certainly in austerity. Similarly, the hard labor involved in preaching, preparing literature, preaching to atheistic men, and distributing literature door to door is, of course, an austerity. Tapo yuktena, tapo dibhyam putraka. Such austerity is necessary. Yena sattam suddhyet. By such austerity and devotional service, one is purified of material existence. Kamansa nayajahau. Indeed, such austerity leads one to the constitutional position of devotional service. In this way, one can give up material desires. And as soon as one is freed from material desires, He is free from the repetition of birth and death, old age and disease. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation and purport to the Srimad Bhagavatam, text 26, chapter 4, canto 9, in the matter of Ambarisha Maharaja offended by Durvasa Muni. Sahitam bhakti yogena tapo yuktena partiva swadamena harim prinam sarvan kaman sanay jahau. So for the kingdom, Maharaj Ambarish had performed various ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices. But personally, as explained here today, he engaged in devotional service. Devotional service is itself an austerity. Analyzing from the external point of view, in other words, that one has to engage in many laborious activities. Prabhupada gives an example here of deity worship. Worshipping the deity takes some time, to decorate the deity, to bathe the deity, to cleanse the temple. There are many temples they don't use tap water for the deity, especially because in India there is pumps. Well, hand pumps, they have leather washers in them, the ones they make in India. So the people, they won't use it for the deity because they won't bathe the deity with water that touch the leather. So they walk to the nearest pond where the water is natural and bring the pond water or the river water, Ganges, Jamuna. This way they do a lot of different activities. Preparing food, performing arti, and the deity is never left untended. There is someone always with the deity. You see the different system. If they leave the deity untended, they have steel gates in front so that no one can come. If some madman or fool wants to come and touch the deity. Unless the deities are closed and the temple is locked. So actually, it's a full activity. So from one point of view, it's an austerity. If you just take it for with the activities, the material aspect of it, it's an austerity to do all of these things. Of course, for the devotee who's awakened his spontaneous devotional service, he very joyfully performs these activities. For that devotee, it's a burden of love. It's not an unpleasant austerity. It's something which they enjoy doing. So in the beginning of devotional service, we're in the Vidhi Marg. That means we do it because it's a rule. These are all the rules we have to do it. Sometimes the devotees are even They just think the rules are most important without knowing that there's a purpose behind the rules also. The rules are there to keep us, to give us the procedure, to keep us engaged all the day in Krishna's service. When we actually become a little more advanced, then the devotee actually likes to perform. First, at the second stage is that it becomes very natural to follow the rules. This is a spontaneous level of practicing Vidhi Marg. Then there comes a stage where one actually enjoys performing devotional service, gets a real bliss from that. So at that point then, the austerity is fun. The austerity itself is enjoyable. So the devotee, on that spontaneous level, for them then it's very easy to continue. Right? When people are working, they think this is drudgery, I'm working. They're waiting to when they can leave the work and go and have fun. Very few people, the work is also fun. Material business, material activity, we do it because we need money. So people do it, but they don't actually, in most cases, they don't enjoy doing it. Or some people, they do what they like to do. If they can do something that more or less they like doing, that people consider, well, he's very fortunate. But the majority of people don't even like doing what they're doing necessarily, or they're just accustomed to doing it, but it's not that they really, if they weren't getting money for it, they would never do it. You see. But the devotee, they do devotional service. The difference between a hired priest and a devotee is a hired priest is doing their worship because he's paid for that. But if he wasn't being paid, well, there was no one to pay him to do it, then he would do something else. So that's not really devotion. And therefore, when you go to a temple with a paid priest, says the deities look unhappy. They're not really taken care of. It's like the difference between a babysitter and a mother. Maybe you're lucky if you have a babysitter, it's like a relative or someone really cares about the children. Sometimes it's just, you know, someone watching the kids to get the $20. They may be expert. Some professional priests are very expert. But there's a difference. If they are regularly doing devotional service, if they would do it anyway, you see, that's the criterion. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he impressed this point that devotees do devotional service because of their devotion to Krishna. Not because they get some material facility for that. Even without material facility, the devotee is going to do his devotional service. So, when one actually reaches the spontaneous level of devotional service and enjoys performing it, that's the perfection. That's the beginning of the perfectional platform. Prabhupada said that if I give the guru, the spiritual master, installs a deity and requests the disciples to worship, he says at first there's utsaho, great enthusiasm to worship the deity. But later on, if the disciples think that, oh, the guru has given me such a burden, I have to get up in the morning and I have to do the arati and I have to offer the Boga. I have to do so many things. These deities are such a burden. That's called Nigraha. It goes from Utsaho to Nigraha, neglect. Then everything is a failure. Then everything is spoiled. So, this Prabhupada, he was very much afraid of, make so many nice temples so people can come and worship Krishna. But if the devotees don't continue chanting very carefully, if they don't keep their mind in reading the transcendental literature, then somehow they get down into the modes of nature and then they start seeing that all these austerities and devotional service, these are a burden. You see, then they miss the whole point. Even in the Vidhi Marg, someone is performing the austerities, but with a very great hope, an aspiration and desire to go back to Krishna. Knowing that by this process I will achieve success. Even if there's a slight problem, Krishna will also correct that. But by sticking to this process, I will eventually achieve success. The symptoms of success are becoming more and more spontaneous, actually getting transcendental bliss while doing the devotional service. But if someone is thinking, oh, this is a burden, and to do so much service, that means that their intelligence is bewildered. They've forgotten what is the whole purpose of their life. They've lost the perspective on what is the actual meaning of devotional service, of who they are. That we are all the eternal servants of Krishna, that we are meant to serve Krishna eternally, that by serving Krishna, we'll return to our constitutional position. Prabhupada mentions this. Always satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead by His constitutional activities, He gradually gave up all material desires. How are we to give up material desires unless we satisfy the Supreme Lord? And how can we satisfy Him unless we are engaged in our constitutional activities? Our constitutional position is what? Jiva Sarupoi Nitya Krishna Das, to be the eternal servitor of Krishna. Therefore Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, since we're His eternal servitor, Man manabha mad bhakta mad dhyaji mang namas kuru. That you think of me, you be my devotee, you bow down to me, you worship me. It actually gives this instruction twice, once in the 18th chapter, once in the 9th chapter. 18th chapter is Man Manava Mad Bhakta Madhyaji Mang Namaskaru Mang Nivaisa Satyante Padijano Priyoshita. You'll come to me if you follow. In the 9th chapter, Yukvayivam, you'll be connected with me. These activities connect us to Him. So we stay connected with Krishna, our material desires go away, then we actually develop a desire to serve Krishna. Initially we have maybe a very feeble desire, we intellectually understood. We are suffering in the material world, so we start serving Krishna, we get some shelter. But then the mind tends to forget, the intelligence gets bewildered, we get... If someone, sometimes they get some relief from devotional service, then because they're lax in their devotional activities, they didn't really understand the philosophy or keep it in the forefront of their consciousness, they start to get bewildered. They start again to desire to enjoy the material world. So when they start to enjoy the material world, then a devotee thinks that, oh, these devotional activities are a burden. They're taking away from the enjoyment of the senses. But if one is fixed in their constitutional position, I am the eternal servitor of Krishna, so these activities are engaging me in my constitutional position of serving Krishna. So these activities are a special mercy of Krishna. If I didn't have these different activities, then Maya would catch me up and I would be engaging in material activities. In fact, we need varieties of devotional service according to our natures, according to different situations, to keep us always occupied. Of course, then there's the problem that some people, they're basically under different modes. Even the material, I read recently an article of one of the magazines on the airplane. It was about, because some of our devotees are talking about psychologists and things like that, so this was interesting. It said, how to reduce your time on the couch with the psychiatrist. They have now rapid service. You just drive in and get a quick session to get you back on your feet and get out there. They call it dynamic psychotherapy or something like that. Dynamic. But anyway, there was one relevant point. They said that there's a lot of people that are totally illogical. That due to the association with their families, with certain friends, with their material society, they develop illogical thought patterns. And this is a very scientific way of saying we're a little nuts. Right? If you think something and it's illogical, and you take it to be true, that means you're taking something which is false as real. That means you're a little crazy, right? But anyway, they don't say that, because that would make people not go there. Nobody thinks they're crazy. So they are, but it's not like a gross, like totally loony. It just means that they take certain things which are true. But that, I mean, in a real sense, is what being insane is. Is you take something totally false as real. I'm Napoleon. Right? So everyone can know, well, that guy's nuts, but I'm not nuts. Right? But I'll take something which is a little bit not true, and I'll take it as true. But I won't think I'm crazy. See, that's it. Nobody thinks they're crazy. But what is a material mode of ignorance? It makes us a little crazy. So anyway, they never use the word crazy. I can see why. I don't know why I used it, I guess I... But they use this point that people develop negative attitudes based upon simply illogical thought training. Like someone's in devotional... I mean, I saw that, I said, well, I know people like that. In fact, a lot of them come to see me all the time. Then say illogical things. At first they didn't elaborate, but they said, you know, if you can go for 40 sessions and then you're back on your feet. Apparently that's a small number. That's supposed to be a small number of sessions to go to a psychologist, get psychiatric help. Otherwise you apparently have to go a long time. I don't know, I never went to those sessions. But we can see this is a problem, that in our devotional service we can accept illogical, unreasonable ideas as a fact, and if we base our consciousness on that, then everything else becomes off. So their whole therapy is based upon showing the person how your thoughts are off. and you should adjust your thoughts. So in Krishna consciousness, we can see that the whole material world is based on certain thoughts which are not reasonable. Just like we're going to live forever. Everyone thinks they're going to live forever. That's not reasonable. Or that we're this body. It's not reasonable. We're not the body. And so on and so on. And therefore you can see that although depending on how, you know, superficially something may appear reasonable, so then it'll work to some extent. But ultimately, because it's not the absolute truth, eventually it'll produce various difficulties, various frustrations. So there's like grossly being unreasonable, and then there's the kind of the spiritually being off. Although that, so the degree would be more, like if we have a devotee that's in a totally negative mood, even though there's no reason to be negative. They're doing devotional service, they're getting their prasadam, they're serving Krishna, but somehow they always take everything and then due to their own particular modes of nature, they turn it into something unreasonable and say, like a thousand good, they say, why is it like this? Why is it like that? Why does it have to be cloudy today? Why is it cloudy today? I don't want it to be cloudy today, you know. And then they'll get all, you know, frustrated because today it's overcast. So that, you know, then a psychologist will train the person, all right, there's no need of being frustrated. What's the Bhagavad Gita tell us? That there's always going to be changes, just like the coming and going of the seasons. Some seasons it's cloudy, some seasons it's sunny. Sita Ushna Sukha Dukada. So there's no need of being frustrated, because sometimes he's going to be happy, sometimes you're going to have material a little bit unhappiness in terms of the sensual perception. It's going to be sunny days, it's going to be rainy days. There's no need of getting frustrated because it's a rainy day. Because it's not in your control, so why be frustrated? If it's rainy or sunny, just go on with your duty. So actually what they're going to teach their patient is already in the Bhagavad Gita thousands of years before. It's just how to accept the realities of life and not be affected by them. But sometimes you'll get to go, why is someone fall down? Why is someone like this? Why? Then they let their mind get absorbed in that. And they go into a kind of a negative attitude. And they walk around, you know, with a long face. And they wonder why things are, they're not happy. But it's because they're just not being reasonable. They're accepting things which are out of our control, which are just the effects of nature, things which are not to be a cause of frustration for our individuals. And they're allowing themselves to be frustrated by them. Or they're allowing themselves to get out of their constitutional position. I'm just being a servitor of Krishna, being happy that I'm serving Krishna. The Brahmins are the most simple. And for them, austerity is their wealth. Austerity is the wealth of the Brahmins. You see, Ambarish was a Kshatriya, but he was also very wealthy in austerity. Therefore, he was a Rajarshi. He was a Raja, also he was a Rishi. He was a great king, and he was a great devotee, a great spiritualist. So whether we're, you see, Rajarshis in India, once we started a program called Vaishya Rishis. Because, well, there's no more kings, it's democracy, but there's many businessmen, so you should become Vaishya Rishis. They like that. Here in America, we can have Sudhya Rishis. For all the workers. There's plenty of Vaishyas here too. But whatever it is, Hindi people need to be Rishis. They need to actually see what is the truth.
So they admit that all the psychiatric help, they don't guarantee it'll last for very long. It'll take you off of one, but again, your mind can go into unreasonable thoughts again, then you have to go back. So once, you know, it's like they have you hooked for your whole life. Because you don't have any absolute truth to link on, they'll just show you, well, this is off, and you should think like this. All right, then you go, then again, you have, after a while, your brain goes off in some other way, then you come back again for another fix-up. So that's the way you go until you leave your body. So what's the difference between us and them then? The difference is that Krishna consciousness is giving you absolute truth. So you can fix your mind in the absolute truth. Once you're fixed in the absolute truth, you don't have to go to the psychiatrist anymore. You don't have to be in a negative mood anymore. Because you are understanding what is the absolute truth. You have become the most sane person. And you can help others. Also, the psychiatrist, they don't know that what's the difference between the modes of nature. The white people think, Yalaji, what is the association? They know that it's association and thought trains that build up negative attitudes, and these create this type of irrational thought, which causes depression and frustration, anger, illusion, etc. They don't realize that what is the particular type of association that causes that. We know what causes that. It's the mode of ignorance. Bhagavad Gita says very clearly, by association with the mode of ignorance, and one develops these qualities, anger, illogical, insane, mad, frustrated, depressed, illusion, etc. How to get out of ignorance? You have to absorb yourself in pure goodness. No one gets out of ignorance by remaining in ignorance. Sleeping too much. One gets out of ignorance by engaging in activities of pure goodness. So if we're depressed, if we're negative, what is the solution? To engage in devotional service, to associate with positive people. And positive people, people with positive meaning, the positive alternative of devotional service. When someone starts to just give out their, you see, negative vibrations, they're not to, you see, accept that. They have to counteract that. They have to dovetail that person's thought trains back to Krishna. Back to Krishna's pastimes. Back to Krishna's devotional service. If we simply remain absorbed like Maharaj Ambarish all the time serving Krishna, He's got a whole entire kingdom to deal with. Surely a kingdom even in other ages still had some problems they had to deal with. But how did he always remain joyful and happy? Because he was always engaged in Krishna service. Every day he had a routine. He'd sweep the temple floor, he'd go in and see the deities, he'd chant the mantras. People come and say, why are you so happy? You're so happy. Many people come up there. Are you really happy? So what do you think? They look at you. You seem to be happy. You seem to be a happy person. But what? Yes, we're happy. Why? Because we're engaging in devotional service. Because we are filling ourselves with devotional activities. If it wasn't for the process, because we're following the process, therefore we're happy. I wouldn't be happy if I wasn't following the process. If I wasn't chanting, if I wasn't talking about Krishna, hearing about Krishna, serving Krishna, I don't know, I wouldn't be happy. Who would be happy? It's not that we're just happy because of some accident. We're following or engaging in Krishna's service. Maharaj Ambarish, he was a liberated soul. Sudarshan Chakra was sitting there in his palace just there for his protection. It wasn't that he said, well, now I've already got Sudarshan Chakra here. I've already been, I got the mercy of Krishna. So there's enough. I don't need to go and wash the temple floor anymore. I don't need to chant Hare Krishna anymore. I don't need to do my devotional service anymore. I've already made it. Now it's time for retirement. I paid my dues. No, just the same. He goes on with his devotional service. Prabhupada, he went on chanting and attending the temple, darshan, seeing the devis every day, lecturing to the devotees, taking prasadam right to the last moment of his pastime. And he's continuing now, even in the spiritual world. The whole spiritual world is doing devotional service. Lakshmi is sweeping the road for Krishna. This devotional service is an eternal occupation. It's an eternal constitutional position. It doesn't change. In the beginning, we do it maybe mechanically because we haven't purified ourselves yet. But when we become free from material desires, then we really start to taste the nectar. We never stop devotional service. There's never a point we stop devotional service. We try to tell Mother Yasoda, stop devotional service. You think she's going to stop cooking for Krishna? Stop dressing Krishna. Stop worrying about where's Krishna now, protecting Krishna. By serving Krishna, when you're in love with Krishna, then you serve Krishna more. Anything which is distracting us from serving Krishna is Maya. There's no other word for it. And those things which are encouraging us and fortifying our devotional service, they're actually the special association we need. They say in South America, they got encarga su pilas. You have to charge your batteries. They relate with this. Puntas. Different. You have to charge up our spiritual force. As we become less in devotional service, spiritually we get down. Then the material modes start to attack us more. And we get into like a spiral, like when those airplanes start to crash. They start to spin. It's very hard to get them out of the spin. One of the training things they do, they take you up in a plane before they give you a license. And while you're in the middle air, about 20,000 feet above, they turn off the engine. They say, now let's see what you do. They make the plane go into a spin. They say, now take it out. Because it may happen sometime in a storm or something. So if you don't know how to do it, then there's an experienced pilot there before it's too late. If you don't do it, he's going to do it. Because what happens is you're going in a plane, and if you go too slow, there's not enough wind going by the wings, the plane just falls down. When it falls down, it starts to spin. So what do you do? That's flying. That's what you have to learn how to do, to get a license. So apparently what you have to do then is you have to aim the plane down. And then gradually as it builds its speed up again, you have to take it out again. When it has enough speed by falling, then you pull it out. Hey, we're not planes, I don't know. If we can use the same thing, well, let me just speed up in my end. They have their technique, we have a different technique. When we see, but the point is that when you're spinning, if you don't get out of the spin, you're going to crash. So what is a spin in devotional service? This is like a syndrome. You weaken your devotional service and you start getting in a mode of ignorance and your mind tries to look for excuses and starts to be illogical. This is bad, that is bad, everything is bad, bad. Then we start getting, then that further disturbs us. We can't concentrate on our chanting. As we start chanting less, then our mind is more powerful, and this way it goes from bad to worse. So in a sense, it's almost you have to speed up. Not that you have to speed up going down, but you have to speed up your devotional service. You have to pull out of it. I mentioned this once before. I had a disciple. He's an engineer in a jumbo jet for the Malaysian Airlines. And they were landing in London. And the pilot was coming down. It was going very slow over London. And all of a sudden, there was like a big thunderbolt and there was a big gust of wind. And it went in the wrong direction and put the plane into a vacuum. And the plane just started falling from the sky right over London. And the pilot didn't know what to do. Everybody got frozen. And all of a sudden, the engineer, my disciple, he just took the throttle. Whoa! Zew! Pull it out again. Just in time. So it's like that. When we're actually the solution when we're in Maya is to wrap up our devotional service. Shoo, get out of there. We have to do more intense devotional service. If we can't absorb in this service, already do that service. But we have to do intensive devotional service. Prabhupada to realize we're not Haridas Thakur's going to sit and chant 300,000 names of Hare Krishna every day. A few devotees came to Mayapur trying to do that and they just fell asleep. You know, even at 16 rounds the devotees are hard, you know. We haven't developed that level of spontaneous taste for chanting. And even when one does develop a taste for chanting, a Prabhupada wants that you should preach to bring the other people to chant. So therefore it is not recommended actually to imitate Haridas Thakur at all. So Prabhupada gave us a full program of devotional service. Deity worship, distributing books, temple management, temple fire management, developing projects, fundraising. Keep everyone busy in Krishna's service. But to remind us that it's not material activity, we have our full spiritual program. Because those who are doing the deity worship all day, they're very fortunate. But sometimes they get familiar with the deities. Therefore, even for them, sometimes going out and preaching, especially here in the West, this one's very advanced, just working with the deity, sometimes they're not also able to concentrate. So whether it's one service or it's a combination, so we have to keep our full energy to Krishna. And if we're giving the energy to Krishna, giving our mental, intellectual power to Krishna, we stay out of the moods. When we get our velocity, our devotional service gets too slow, then we start to fall, we lose altitude. Ramakrishna Goswami, he mentioned how when he was in Bombay, he was like the temple president, the GBC, in charge of the book publication, BBT, so many different services. And then Prabhupada, then he was asked to do the construction on top of it all. So he came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I don't have any time. So day to night, I mean, more eggs, I get this one and that, all the services, I have no time. How am I going to do it? I won't have any time for anything. Prabhupada says, very good, I have no time for Maya. This will keep you fully engaged. This is actually what... In fact, Prabhupada even said, well, I made the Mayapur project so that there would be something for you all to do. Some devotees, they require a big project in order to use all of their abilities. Just the routine work isn't enough. They need something where they can really expand the service unlimitedly. Like some, they're happy just to do the arati and some serving, but then there's some pujaris. They want big outfits for the deities and fix everything up and expand. They want to see the whole deity worship expand more and more. Take it as a whole project. Right? For some devotees, they take and build a whole village for Krishna, with temples and parks and gardens and agricultural fields and dairies and everything nice, communities, schools. It's also that's a mercy of Prabhupada to keep devotees engaged. He expects the Americans, they're creative people. They built up a whole nation from scratch in 200 years, right? So he wanted that they should do something here in the West to show the wonderfulness of Krishna consciousness. See, so he gave us these projects, like Nutalavan Project, to build up something wonderful, to engage so many active devotees, their intellect, their energy, their creative ability, so many different facets. Someone may develop a deity program, the agriculture program, the dairy program, the school program, the community program, the business for raising the funds, preaching aspects, cultivating congregation and Indian members, everything. It's unlimited. So we can chant our rounds, see the deities, and engage all our energy all day long. Engage our intelligence. If we're not somehow engaging our mind and our energy, then we're missing out. Ambarish Maharaj, he's considered an example of Atma Nivedana. He's considered an example of all. Mali Maharaj and Atma Nivedana, he just surrendered everything. But Ambarish, he did 9 practices of devotional service. He's considered the best of all. He was a grihasthi, he was a king. But he did 9 practices. He did hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, bowing down, being a servant, being a friend. He did a deity worship. He did everything. He did complete surrender. He never stopped doing it. Not for a moment. Therefore, he won the heart of Krishna. Therefore, Sudarshan Chakra, Krishna said, all right, he just left Sudarshan here. Here, you protect Ambarish Maharaj. So he doesn't have to worry about the demons, he can just go on his devotional service. Krishna helps those who help themselves, those who help themselves in keeping themselves engaged in devotional service. It's certainly a nice mercy if Krishna left his Sudarshan Chakra in Nutalavan. But to get those type of special mercies, devotees, it's a causeless mercy, but the devotees work very hard. They engage very hard, and Krishna protects. Even there were so many legal problems that many of them, by Krishna's mercy, they were cleared up. You see? Because the devotees were working so enthusiastically. But we have to be careful never to be lax. Never to allow the 11 qualities of the material nature to enter in. Problems again may come. As Krishna's causeless mercy, we will always be able to overcome the problems. In the material world, there is always problems. I mean, even Ambarish was a pure devotee. Durvasa Muni is going to create a problem for him. But ultimately, it didn't matter anything to him because he was so pure. But the Sudarshan Chakra just took it in his own hands to protect Ambarish Maharaj. So what is our duty? Our duty is simply to serve, to be pure, to become pure. By engaging in devotional service constantly. That is the reason for having a temple and a community. Anybody can work. Anyone can make money. Anybody can do anything that everyone's doing in the material world. But not everybody can engage in devotional service, can eat Krishna prasadam, can chant Hare Krishna, can associate with the Vaishnavas, and create a spiritual environment. This is something very rare. This is the most valuable thing in the whole world. Because it is like creating the most positive influence for the entire universe. Anyone who comes in that association can get purified. They get benefited by taking prasadam. Just like in India, there are holy places. So Prabhupada is creating holy places. But holy places is not just the place. In India, all right, Krishna appears somewhere, Lord Chaitanya appears. But even that says to go to a holy place and bathe in the river without seeing the saintly people of the holy place and hearing from them about the science of Krishna consciousness. It's like a cow going and bathing in the river. What's the difference? Saiva Gokar. So here in the West, the deity is present. Because of the deity, it becomes a place of pilgrimage. And the devotees are living, serving the deity. And when people come here, they need to hear about Krishna from the devotees. And this way, this has become a place of pilgrimage. It's a place for purifying the people of this material world. So actually, we have a very big benediction from Prabhupada, from Lord Krishna, a great, great opportunity to do something which is inconceivable. Demigods, they live for their whole life. They don't go back to Godhead from even the heavenly planets. They have to come back again. Even they go up to Brahmaloka. Unless they become fully Krishna conscious, they're coming back. But by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada for giving us Lord Chaitanya's message, if we simply remain fully absorbed in our Krishna consciousness, at least try to be fully absorbed. If we're a few percent off, Krishna is very kind. Lord Chaitanya is very kind. It may take us anywhere. But we have to try to be fully Krishna conscious, and we go back to Him, back to Godhead. We engage in Krishna service eternally, wherever Krishna is, wherever the Sankirtan movement is. So the devotees, they perform very hard labor. But this austerity is a burden of their love. They do it because they love Krishna. And this service offered to Krishna, that this is for your pleasure, Krishna, then Krishna, He is the most reciprocal. For one step we take Him, He takes 10 to us. If we offer something to Him without asking anything in return, just Krishna, simply for your pleasure, then Krishna, He is more desirous of pleasing the devotee. And if our real desire is to have love for Krishna, then He'll give us that. If we have some other desires, He'll even give us those desires. But the best possible means of satisfying one's desire is to engage in Krishna service. We should be careful though to desire the right thing. Not to let our desires go into things which will not be fully Krishna conscious. Of course, by engaging in the devotional service and trying to purify our consciousness, automatically we give up our material desire. Because Krishna is so attractive, as we get purified, we start to manifest our spontaneous attraction for Krishna. We start to get a taste, we start to become attached, and we experience ecstatic love. Then eventually when Krishna reveals His glory to the devotee, we develop prema or pure love. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Any question? Manarupa, Devi Dasi.
How far can we go in helping some devotee out of this form? I know
it's always depending on the
situation of the devotee that wants to help.
It depends, doesn't it? On the devotee. How receptive the devotee is. If someone's willing to listen, really listen, you can help them completely. If they're willing to listen and they act on what they hear, you can help them. There's some people, they're not willing to listen. They only listen a little bit. Then the only thing we can help them best by being strong ourselves. You can't help someone by becoming weaker. You can't help someone by coming down to a lower level. It's not that we come down to someone's lower level in order to help them. We can relate, because we've been through that. We can relate with what they're going through. But we remain in as strong a spiritual position as we can. And being kind and friendly and encouraging, we go on with our service. So by being very absorbed in Krishna consciousness, the devotee is so positive that even by associating with such a devotee, the other person becomes purified. They become enthused. It's like action speaks more than words. Sometimes you say something, they may not accept it. But then later they see that the devotee is living by what the devotee is saying. And therefore, what they're saying is what they're doing. And they're happy. And then the person realizes, I'm not happy. Then they get, by Krishna's mercy, they can sometimes get their intelligence back and see, oh, I have to admit defeat. And everybody's trying to compete. Who's better than the Joe? Who's happier? I got the bigger car. I got the bigger. I'm happier. I told this story once. I used to always ride my bicycle, but we had no money, no car in Mayapur. We just had little money for construction, but Prabhupada said he can't use it for maintenance, so he wouldn't use any. So we didn't even have money for the car. I'd go by bicycle into Krishnanagar. We'd buy nuts and bolts and hardware, nails and steel and things from this one hardware shop. They'd load it onto a horse and buggy, and by horse cart they'd carry it to Mayapur for 20 rupees. $2. 20 miles horse cart. 1 ton. So then, one day I went and the owner of the shop, I was chanting and I was happy, I was building my airport for Prabhupada. I don't know, he must have had a bad day or something. He just looked at me and he says, why are you happy? What do you have to be happy about? I should be happy. I got a 2-story house made out of bricks. I got a car. I got a wife, kids. I got money. I got my own business. I got everything. But why are you happy? You got nothing. You're just wearing one thin cloth. You ride here on a bicycle. You've given up your rich country, everything. You don't have anything. Why are you happy and I'm not? He became a light member. Huh? He's not still not fully happy because he didn't surrender yet. He's happier for serving Krishna. Any other question? Yes?
Yes, Shepa, sometimes you see like devotees that they do a lot of service and they work their hard and you know, they sometimes can get into that mentality that I'm doing so much service and no one else is doing anything and I'm working so hard and they're working really hard and doing a lot of service. But they see that like, no one else is doing, you know, I'm working so hard, I'm doing so much and no one is helping and so much to be done and no one is, you know, how can you, like, I mean, they're actually engaged in devotional service but still, like, can get that mentality.
Yes, illogical.
I
that what they're thinking, it doesn't make any sense, because what are we serving for? We're serving for pleasing Krishna. So each serves up to his capacity. If Hanuman would have said that to Lord Ram, you know, I'm lifting all the rocks up. What about these other guys? They're not lifting as many rocks as I am. Everyone tried to their full capacity to serve as much as they can. Maybe one person has more capacity. If we serve less than our capacity, we'll be in Maya. So it's not that... And even when Hanuman told the little mouse, or was it not a mouse, was it a squirrel or something?
Spider.
Yeah. Sometimes they say a squirrel, sometimes a spider.
It's a squirrel.
I heard it was a squirrel. Cat Barali, they call it in Bengali. But anyway, I think it's a squirrel, really. But I heard spider sometimes. Whichever. So get out of my way that... you know, I'm doing the service of Lord Ram, throwing mountaintops into the water. Then Ram said, don't get puffed up. You're serving up to your capacity. He's serving up to his full capacity. I may be more pleased with his service than with your service. So don't disturb him in his service. He's helping. Because that little squirrel or whatever was throwing into the water, also some little pebbles. Maybe someone's been serving for several births in devotional service, and they have a much bigger capacity. You see, in the Olympics, of course, the people, they always run better if they have a very good competitor, because then they always try to beat that competitor. If there's no competitor, then sometimes, you know, just running against the clock, sometimes it's hard for them to beat the world records. When there's a lot of good competitors, they get, you know, I have to do really hard to win. So they try harder. On devotional service, sometimes there's devotees of a very similar level, so it's easy for us to compete or try to compete, not in the sense of try to just do more service and say, oh, that devotee is doing so nicely, I should try to do more. It may be that some devotee is doing more service than everyone else, although I would be hard to believe. It could also be the mind's illusion. But it might be that someone's doing at that time a little more service than others. So then there's no... in that particular temple. Of course, if you would see in the whole universe, if you would compare, therefore we don't really, you know, if we have an association like that in Sankirtan or something, that helps us, it helps to pace us. It can be like an encouragement, but if we happen to do better, well then we don't continue to compare, you know, that this far the kind of the beginning stage, you might compare yourself with different devotees and try to do more. If it seems that, well, actually, I'm doing more service, then we don't want to slow down and let the others catch up. The point is that we know that the real pure devotees are like Maharaj Ambarish, who 24 hours a day was engaged in devotional service. Or like, actually like Hanuman, or like Arjuna, or like the residents of Vrindavan, ultimately Srimati Radharani, who are engaged in so wonderful sir, Srila Prabhupada, the example he gave. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the six Goswamis, sleeping 1.5 hours a night. Who can say that I'm only sleeping 1 hour a night? I'm doing so much service, I don't even feel tired. Are we on their level of these great acharyas? They're our role models. They're the great devotees we'd like to follow in their footsteps. You see, even if we're able to apparently surpass, although this could also be our own false ego, because Krishna may say that, well, they're doing more to their capacity more than you. We shouldn't think like that even. But even if apparently it seems that someone's doing more service than the other devotees in the temple. Anyway, our goal is to do our 16 rounds, attend the temple program, and do as much service as we can. If we do more service, there's more mercy. This was why Jayananda went back to Godhead. Why we celebrate his disappearance day. Because he was the one devotee, he was the senior most devotee around in his time. He was probably one of the first devotees in ISKCON. And he never complained about service. He always wanted to do service. In fact, if he saw that no one cleaned the kitchen up, he'd clean the kitchen himself. He'd carry out the garbage. And how he enthused other devotees to do the service was by doing it. And saying, this is great, Prabhu, I want to help. He said, actually, you're such a good devotee. He said, I'm not a good devotee. He'd praise everyone. They said, no, you're a very great devotee, Jaina. You're always, no, no, I don't have any qualification. I just like to serve, but otherwise, you're actually very, you're much more sincere than I am. I've been so long, still I'm not surrendered. Look at how you just joined. You're very enthusiastic and surrendered. So many. I was in Philadelphia for his disappearance this year, and there are many devotees who work with him. See, I had a very short association, about 10 days. He was the one who shaved me up first time and engaged me in the devotional service building, the Rath Yatra cart in San Francisco in 1968. As much as anyone, he has responsible for encouraging me to surrender to Prabhupada. But after that, I didn't have that much association because I was in Canada, he was here in America. I went to when Prabhupada was in Canada. But there are many devotees that are working with him for many years, and they brought out all these qualities. But how he was always certain. And even he'd do all the service, and it's still at night he'd be chanting 11 o'clock, well, I have a few rounds to finish. He'd finish all the service, even other devotees, cover everyone in the temple. And then he'd finish his rounds. If he didn't have it finished, then he'd take rest. He'd still be up next morning. I was thinking about Rath Yatra car, how to build a Rath Yatra, serving. Wasn't a big temple president or GBC. He was a pure devotee. And that's what we're trying to be, is pure devotee. Pure devotee doesn't think like that. So why should we think like that? Pure devotee thinks that I got so much mercy, Krishna's giving me so much service. I see these other devotees, they're a little bit in the modes, they're not engaging in service. How to let them share the nectar? So they do their devotional service, and then by their spontaneous enthusiasm, they're able to bring in other people into doing the service. They can say, well, this person's always serving, right? It's just contagious, right? Just like if someone's really always in a negative mood, it's contagious. If you hang around that person, you're not very strong. Pretty soon, you know, everybody's... because they go on talking and thinking in negative ways, and they get your mind off of Krishna. But if someone's really thinking about Krishna, very enthusiastic, and then as soon as someone tries to bring up some Maya thought, they just take it and spin it around, back, Hare Krishna. Wow, you see how that Prabhu did that today? Yeah, Krishna's always testing us. We have to be firm. You know, whatever they come with, a little bit of negative, boom, throw it back, you know. Vishnu Dwara versus Shiva Dwara. Right? So usually what happens, all the negative people kind of hang around by themselves. After a while, when they can't pull anyone else down, they just kind of stay by themselves in the moats. But the positive devotees are able to bring, come on Prabhu, this is ecstasy, this is nectar, we're serving Krishna. That's what Jayananda was like. He said, I just walked by, what are they doing here? They're all, you know, I said, Hari Bol. So what are you doing? Oh, we're having a festival. Didn't know it? Rathyatra festival. I thought the festival already started. They're just building the rod, you know? Really? He says, yeah.
When?
You know, I just saw a couple pieces of 2x4s and some nails. And he says, wait, can you just hold this for a second? He gave me a nail. He says, here. You know, wow, you held that nail great. Are you a professional carpenter? No. But you really held it straight, you know? I mean, it's very hard to find people holding nails straight. And he held the nail. Can, you know, just can you hit it? Wow, did you hit that nail good? I mean, the way you handle that hammer, take that. Can you, you know, and pretty soon I was holding the nail. And pretty soon there I was, you know, working on the rock. Everyone chanting Hare Krishna, hammering away. They started. The men were pleasing Krishna, were serving Krishna. Where the whole world's in mind, that means we're going to stop serving Krishna. Prabhupada was the only person in the entire United States who was in Krishna consciousness. Everybody was totally in the mode of ignorance and passion. Still, he tried to give them Krishna consciousness. Even at everybody else in mind, you mean we won't serve it? I mean, it's totally illogical. But we accept that yet. As they accept in their mind, this is a logical thing. I am serving, I'm doing all the work. Probably the person's not even chanting properly or reading, you know, because therefore they're not able to focus that they're serving Krishna. If they just surrender to Krishna, I'm trying to serve. But whatever I'm doing, it's not even enough. Still the temple's not clean, still there's not enough money, still there's not enough devotees, still there's not enough books going out. I'm not even able to do enough. How do I encourage the other devotees to do more? How can I do more? To achieve all these wonderful goals, to give everyone the message of Srila Prabhupada? Last question.
Well, we can perform our service in a humble way. Sometimes we become so proud of our small quantity of service, we start to diminish the service of others and that way become offensive. How we can involve our service in a humble way.
That's the other point. So someone may think he's doing more service, but actually it's just the student of false pride. We should be humble. We're supposed to think ourselves lower than the star on the street and to see others offer all respect to others. Mana dena, mana nena. Giving respect to others, not desiring respect for yourself. Sometimes people, they speak like that because they just want people to give them respect. I'm working so hard, I'm doing so much. Why, you know, what they really want to hear is you say that to them. Yes, Prabhu, you're doing so much, you're working so hard, you're the greatest devotee. But that's all, we don't mind doing that. I tell it to everyone that's working hard. You're doing great, wonderful. Where's the heart? Of course, the guru's not supposed to do it to his disciple, they really get puffed up. But as Vaishnavas to others, it's all right to do that. We shouldn't desire it, though. We shouldn't desire it. And we shouldn't think like that, actually. We should think ourselves, whatever we're doing, is really not enough. Certainly, if we became more efficient, if we became more expert, probably used to cry when someone would fall in Maya. But Krishna sent us this soul, we weren't able to save it. If I was a little more expert, if I was more surrendered, maybe I could have reached his heart, convinced his intellect, somehow got him to stay as a devotee. Even though it's totally independent, it's out of our hands if someone's to be in Maya. But still Prabhupada felt responsible how we could, how that soul has left us. We had Krishna sent him to us, we weren't able to serve Krishna properly. You see, I heard that someone read, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that every day before we take rest, we can just review what we did during the day, what services we did, how many moments we wasted, how many opportunities we had, where we could have done the service better, where we failed, where was improved from the previous day, how to improve again tomorrow. Then we take our rest. Then the next day, then we start like every day trying to improve. Actually, we want to improve our own service. We're not comparing ourselves with others. We have to compare ourselves with ourselves. And ourselves with the pure devotees who are in the perfectional platform. Sometimes for competition in a particular service, if it's that type of a service, like some, we may use others just because it's very easy. That's not necessarily absolute. Ultimately, even if we're the best Sankirtan devotee, like Prabhupada, so some temple would do so much and win the marathon, then Prabhupada would say, all right, very nice. Congratulations, everyone's congratulations. Los Angeles has won the marathon. Then they say, all right, now double it. It's not that, you know, all right, I know I'm on the top. It's a, so it's always trying to increase. So therefore we have to follow was Shikashtaka to be Chanada Pisa Nichena Toriva Sihishana Manena Manade Titaniya Sanahari. If we follow this formula, then we can chant Hare Krishna. If we get puffed up, we will, eventually we'll even stop chanting. I am doing so much for Krishna, no one's doing anything, and in the end, what's the result? We don't do anything for Krishna. Then it shows that it's not the logic. Who wants more mercy of Krishna? If no one, we're competing for Krishna's favor. If we can do more service, Krishna says, oh, this devotee is so nice, doing such nice service, let me go and meet this devotee. That's the problem. We should serve that Krishna can see us. Whether others see us or not, that doesn't matter. We want that Guru and Krishna should see us. If they see, if they give us their mercy, that's all we want. You may please someone in the material world one day, next day you may not please that person because they're not free from the modes of nature. They are seeing things through the colors of the influence of the nature's modes. We want to be seen. Our service should be seen and recognized by Krishna. If Krishna is pleased, then we're pleased. Automatically, we'll feel transcendental pleasure. Hare Krishna.